The Book of Numbers is one of those books that just by its name you imagine what it must be like, something that the count would enjoy. But then it proves to be very much unlike what you were expecting. Numbers is called thus in English because there are two censuses of Israel toward the beginning and the end of the book, which are the numbers that are involved. But the Hebrew title of the book, coming from the very first word of the book, Hamidbar, the wilderness, is a much more appropriate description, because Numbers describes the period of Israel in the wilderness from Sinai to the Jordan, and it also describes how they were in a spiritual wilderness of sorts with the way that they acted, their faithlessness, and how the generation in the wilderness was condemned. Even Moses and Aaron falter in Numbers, and that is why it's good for us to consider what is going on with Numbers, and what we can say about it. The author of Numbers is most certainly Moses. In John 3:14, Jesus makes reference to the events of Numbers 21:4-9 with Nehushtan, the serpent in the wilderness. Balaam is referred to often in the New Testament, 2 Peter chapter 2, Jude 1, and also in Revelation chapter 2. The events that are described in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1-12, involve things that happened in Exodus, but also in Numbers, when they're out in the wilderness and they are condemned. So Numbers is reckoned as part of the Torah, recognized as inspired by Jesus and the apostles. When it comes to dating, the events that would have taken place around here, 1450 to 1410 or so, it seems to kind of come in two bursts, that most of the book takes place in the days, maybe within the year after they leave Sinai, and actually leaving Sinai, and then just out of nowhere, it seems that we've just fast-forwarded 40 years. And looking at the events that are taking place just before Moses' final speech in Deuteronomy and entering the Promised Land in Joshua. So around the year 1410 BC, and Moses would have written regarding all these things soon after these events. The original audience is Israel after the wilderness. After all, the wilderness generation was the one who lived through it, though there's much that we can derive from it as well. And it tells us the story of Israel from Sinai to the Jordan, why there are 2.5 tribes of Israel on the Transjordan, on the eastern side of the Jordan River, and to provide insight as to what we should avoid doing to not be like the Israelites who came before us, and to see how we are tempted to be like those Israelites in the wilderness. The main sections of Numbers, the first four chapters, are the census and logistics. Then we have five chapters of laws, offerings, and the tabernacle service. Chapters 11 through 17 are about the rebellion of Israel and its consequences. The time of Israel and the Transjordan and the events going on there are Numbers 18 through 36. So again, the first census is established at the beginning of the book, where God commands it, assistance from each tribe is chosen. The Levites are accepted, and the nature of the camp and where all the camps of each tribe are relative to the tabernacle and the order of them on the march is thus also described. Chapters 3 and 4 are about Levitical orders, the lineage of Aaron, the duties of Aaron and his sons, and how the sons of Levi are listed out, what the Gershonites do, what the Kohathites do, what the Merarites do, and also where they dwell relative to the tabernacle, and also their duties and their census numbers are provided. In chapters 5 and 6, we have various laws about various issues that go on, including concerns about the Nazirite vow, what that looks like, what it means, why it's important. You got to remember Samson and John the Baptist really will be Nazirites in their own way. And then the end of the chapter is the high priestly blessing of Aaron, which is very important and significant throughout Israelite history, even to this day. Yahweh bless you and protect you. Yahweh make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Yahweh lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And that is how Aaron would bless the Israelites. That's actually one of the earliest fragments of Hebrew that we've discovered. There was a piece of silver jewelry with this inscribed upon it that was discovered in Israel. And it remains a beautiful blessing to this day. In chapter 7, we get the offerings of every tribe of the Israelites listed out in great detail, even though it's the same offering from each tribe. We then have some instruction about the Levites in chapter 8. In chapter 9, it's about how the Passover is to be observed because they have reached the second Passover. We have now been 1 year out since we left Egypt. Then in chapter 10, after observing that second Passover, Israel now sets out from Sinai. And so they all go out. And then in chapters 11 and 12, we've got more complaints from the Israelites. They want meat. They despise manna. God gives them all the meat they can eat. And then some. We also see in this time that there's a portion of the spirit of Moses given to the 70 elders. And Eldad and Medad, who are not part of those, also prophesy in the camp. And Joshua wants that to stop. And Moses says that he wants all Israelites to prophesy. So that little incident is recorded here. After they ate all the meat, there was a plague on the people, and the place was named Kibroth Hattaavah because of it. In chapter 12, Aaron and Miriam murmur against Moses and his Cushite wife. Because of that, God strikes Miriam with leprosy for 7 days, and that humbles Aaron and Miriam, and they are to remember their position relative to Moses. In chapter 13 and 14, we start getting into some of the core action that defines the book of Numbers. There's an order for spies to go into the land of Canaan. They come from each tribe. They go and investigate the land. They bring back beautiful fresh grapes from Eshcol. They all speak well of the land. The 10 of them talk about the greatness of the people there, magnifying the challenge. Caleb and Joshua, however, trust that Yahweh would give them the victory for Israel. Chapter 14, we see that the people believe the 10. And in fact, in their insanity in chapter 14, we see that they want to take up leaders and go back to Egypt. They want to go back into slavery because they're convinced they're just going to die when they are confronted by these opponents. Moses and Aaron and Joshua implore the people to repent, but the people are about to stone them. And then Yahweh appears, and he declares that he is now going to destroy Israel, just like he was going to do with the incident of the golden calf. Moses again intercedes for them, but there is a sentence. Everybody over the age of 20 would die in the wilderness, except for Caleb and Joshua. The generation that they thought would be a spoil would be the ones who actually go in and conquer the land. Those 10 spies who gave the report they did die by plague before Yahweh. Israel, therefore, quote-unquote, repents. They see the error of their ways. And so now they try, without and against the word of Yahweh, to go and take the land. And they are defeated by a force of Amalekites and Canaanites. Chapter 15, in the middle of all of this, we get some more laws, some offerings for various forms of sin, presentation of flour and oil with offerings. There's a man who was found gathering sticks on the Sabbath, and he was ordered to be stoned, and also provision made for tassels of garments. And then we get more action in chapter 16 and 17. Korah and a few other men stand in opposition against Moses and against Aaron, declaring that Moses has gone too far. The community is holy, every one of them. Yahweh is among them. Why do you exalt yourselves over the community of Yahweh? And this was a very severe thing. Everybody who was involved in this were to take censers. All were to stand before Yahweh. God would destroy the conspirators. That Moses says that the earth swallows them up, that Yahweh has sent Moses. And guess what? The earth swallows them up. Everyone Israel fears. The other conspirators are consumed by fire. The way the censors of those guys were to be taken care of was established. The people's accusations against Moses lead to a plague among the people, 14,700 of which die. And then in chapter 17, God again establishes his choice of Aaron by having a bunch of people put sticks in the, and overnight, Aaron's staff is the one who buds, and that is placed in the ark as a continual memory. Because of this, the people are humbled. Then in chapters 18 and 19, there are more guidelines for the priests and what they are supposed to be doing and how they are supposed to deal with many things. And recognition, Levi will not have its own land grant. They will instead be dispersed throughout the land of Israel, and their portion will be the tithe of the Israelites. In chapter 20, we see Israel enter the wilderness of Zin, and Miriam dies. We have every reason to believe that this is now the passage of the 40 years, or a significant part of that 40-year period. So we've moved from somewhere around 1449 to 1411, 1412, something like that, B.C. Israel complains for water. And God is told Moses and Aaron to speak to a rock, but they take the glory from God. They say they are going to bring forth water, and they strike the rock. God condemns Moses and Aaron to death for without crossing the Jordan for doing that because they did not honor God's name as holy, and the name of the place was named Meribah. They want to pass through the Edomites. The Edomites deny their request, so Israel goes around them on Mount Hor. Aaron dies, and Eleazar, his son, is made high priest. The king of Arad comes out to fight Israel, and Israel destroys them at a place called Hormah in the beginning of chapter 21. There's grumbling on the road, and this is the incident in chapter 21 of the venomous snakes. Yes, that's fiery serpents. The serpents themselves are not on fire. It's because when they bite you, it feels like you're on fire because they're venomous. Many are dying. They cry out to God. God tells Moses to make a bronze serpent that if they all look at, they will be saved. They will be delivered from the venom. That happens. That stick will later become an idol that they will have to destroy in the days of Hezekiah. And this is the illustration that Jesus will use, that as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so the Son of Man must be lifted up in John chapter 3. Israel now reaches the border of Moab. And in this land there between Moab and Ammon, there is the Canaanites, the Amorites, with Sihon. Sihon is defeated, and Israel takes over his land from the Arnon to the Jabbok on this eastern side of the Jordan River. Og is also there. Og is this huge guy. His bed will be there forever. As a memory of how tall he was, one of the descendants of the Nephilim, the Anakim, he is defeated, and Israel takes over his land as well. Balak, the king of Moab, is watching all of this and is less than pleased. And so he and the Midianites send for Balaam to curse Israel in chapter 22. Balaam is at first forbidden to go, but then Balak sends higher emissaries and Balaam goes. And then we have the fun story in Numbers 22 of Balaam and his donkey, where his donkey granted a vision of the angel of Yahweh standing before him and stops moving. Balaam starts beating the poor donkey. Then the spirit inspires the donkey to talk to Balaam, which must have been an awkward moment for Balaam. And then Balaam's eyes are open to see the angel of Yahweh before them, who would have struck him dead if it hadn't been for the faithfulness of his donkey. And the angel of Yahweh there is even called a Satan, the opponent, because he is standing against Balaam in this, and strictly warns Balaam to only say what he is told to say, which he will do. And so Balak wants Balaam to curse Israel, and in three instances, Balaam stands before Israel in various places, and what comes out of his mouth from Yahweh is not cursing, but in fact blessings. This is throughout chapter 23, and in chapter 24, Balak is angry about this, but then Balaam prophesies about Israel and Moab. Now, what is not explicitly stated in the text, but is required to understand chapter 25, is that Balaam has described to Balak what he can do against the Israelites, that they'll never find the ability to do anything against Israel in terms of their God directly. Instead, that he needs to induce the Israelites to rebel against their God, and then God will punish them. And thus, we see that Midianite women are sent in to seduce Israelites, and they are successful, and the Israelites begin serving Baal of Peor. In fact, one of the chiefs of Israel takes the Midianite chief's daughter into his tent, and Phinehas, son of Eleazar, is driven by his zeal and comes in and spears them through both in their tent in Numbers 25. Because of this, Yahweh says plague was averted, but that's only after 24,000 died, and that Phinehas would be the next priest because of his zeal for God. And that will be a memory in Israel for many generations after this. And Israel would then attack Midian, including Baal. Balaam and all of those types. Then in chapters 26 and 27, you see the second census. You can compare the two, and you can see differing numbers for differing tribes. Some have grown, some have been reduced significantly. And of course, the point there is that in chapter 26, 64, and 65, it's only Caleb and Joshua, and at this time, obviously Moses, who was still around from the previous generation, that everyone else had perished, thus fulfilling the word God had sent. Moses is then told to see Canaan and to appoint Joshua as his successor. We're also introduced to the daughters of Zelophehad, who is a gentleman who died in one of the plagues, but he had all these daughters. And because he only has daughters, there need to be different rules for inheritance for them. and they will be able to get their inheritance. We will see them again in a minute. In chapters 28 through 30, we have more laws about food offerings, offerings on the Sabbath, the different offerings and the different days of observations, the vows and how they're legislated, who can make vows and what happens there. And then we've got the war against Midian talked about in greater detail in chapter 31. And Balaam is killed, and women and animals and property are plundered, probably the same women that many of them had consorted with, etc., etc. Moses is angry because the male children and non-virgin women have been spared, and Israel therefore kills them all. And then there's purifications for all of that. And plunder is also separated out for those who are left behind in the tabernacle, setting forth some guidelines for how Israel will conduct itself in the future. Chapter 32, we see that Reuben, Gad, and half of the Manassites, really like the land they're in, like the land of the Transjordan that they have conquered from Sihon and Og. And they request that land as their inheritance. And Moses is very mad at them for this, because that's discouraging Israel from crossing over and doing what God would have them to do. But they swear they will, the men of them, will go over to help the other tribes of Israel fight to conquer the land of Canaan. And they are going to do that. And the command is thus proclaimed before all Israel, and land and cities is thus given to Reuben, Gad, and to Machir, son of Manasseh, which will be a decent chunk of the Manassites in the Transjordan. Chapter 33, beginning of it, we see a recap of Israel's wilderness wanderings. Then we have the final instructions given, the instructions to go possess Canaan, dispossess nations, to give the inheritance, warnings about disobedience, the boundaries of Israel, and the men who will portion out the inheritances to the various tribes within that land. The cities given to the Levites and their pasture lands, the cities of refuge are set forth, where if somebody dies, kills somebody accidentally, we call involuntary manslaughter, they can run to these cities. And if these cities, that's adjudicated, the person has indeed committed involuntary manslaughter, they can stay there until the death of the high priest, and then they can return to their land. Then at the end, you have again the Dar Zelobahad. The Manassites are very concerned that they're going to marry outside their clans, and the inheritance will be lost to other tribes, and therefore they are commanded that they must marry within their clan. All of this seems very oddly specific, but this is all case law to help guide Israel to make sure that inheritances are managed for those who do not have sons, but also that the land does not get disproportionately taken by other people. And these are all the commands given by Moses at the Jordan River, pretty much at Mount Nebo, in Numbers 36 and verse 13, and thus ends the book of Numbers. As we've seen, there are a lot of very important events described in the book of Numbers, especially Israel and the spies, Korah's rebellion, Israel at Meribah, and that, of course, will become the story of the hardening of heart in Psalm 95. That'll become such a part of the Hebrews author exposition in Hebrews chapter 4. Of course, we mentioned the fiery serpents, and, of course, the example of Balaam, who is a prophet yet a treacherous, duplicitous man, and why we see him being condemned, or people who are in his image being condemned in 2 Peter, Jude, and Revelation chapter 2. And so, yes, Numbers is a book of Israel in the wilderness, and Israel was truly indeed in the wilderness. It's a lot more than just Numbers. There's a lot of rebellion and its consequences there, moments of despair, some victories. And there's a lot that we can gain from it, because we can find ourselves in the same position, trusting in God in the wilderness of life, so to speak. But we have to trust in God. And it's very easy that at every moment of crisis that we again complain, we wonder where God is, like the Israelites did. And we should take heed to the book of Numbers, less to wag our fingers at those impious Israelites and to ask ourselves, when are we tempted to be like those Israelites in our relationship with God, so that we can do better and that we can glorify God and serve him and obtain the resurrection of life in Jesus. We're so glad that you've joined us. If you have any questions or comments about the book of Numbers, anything we've discussed, please let us know in the comments. Continue our conversation. I'm Ethan. We're with the Venice Church of Christ. We are disciples, making disciples of Jesus in Los Angeles. We'd love to be of encouragement and service to you. Please, if we can be of any benefit to you, if you have a prayer request, you'd like to study the Bible, you'd like to come meet with us, any way we can encourage you, please let us know at our website, venicechurchofchrist.org. You can also find us on all kinds of social media, Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter,
now X, YouTube, things of that nature, at Venice Church. We again thank you and have a great day, and may the Lord bless and keep you until we're able to meet again.